You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
We always begin the annual Sabanji lecture with a sentence that includes the very important word, inshallah. We are connected to our friends at Sabanji University in Istanbul with technology that is going to work brilliantly, inshallah. Aisha, are you hearing us? Are you hearing us, Aisha?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Terrific. The weather is not smiling on us either here in Washington today or in Istanbul. I think we have a sort of sympathetic vibration going between Washington and what I regard as the most beautiful city on the face of the earth, Istanbul. It's chilly and rainy there. It's chilly and rainy here. But we're in for a terrific event this morning. And I want to thank all of you for being here for the 7th Sagip Sabanji Lecture. And I want to offer particular greetings and thanks to Aisha and her colleagues and the students and faculty and the visitors and guests at the university in Istanbul who come to us by way of this video link. In due course, Aisha is going to help moderate the discussion on the Istanbul end. And here in the Falk Auditorium at the Brookings Institution, my friend and colleague Fiona Hill, senior fellow in the foreign policy program at Brookings, and the director of our Center on the United States and Europe, will serve as moderator. And by the way, to all of our friends in Istanbul, Fiona is going to be coming your way next week, is going to be meeting with a number of you, we hope. And please do what you can to improve the weather by the time that she gets there. As you all know, I think, because as I look around the room, I can see here on this end a number of people who have been to these lectures in the past. This lecture is a living memorial to Sagip Sabanji, who was a far-sighted entrepreneur, a champion of Turkey's political and economic reforms, and an outstanding and very influential philanthropist. With us here in Washington this morning, and it's, of course, morning here in Washington, is Sagip Sabanji's niece, Güler Sabanji, who is the chair of the Sabanji University Board, a friend of the Brookings Institution, a personal friend of many of us here in this room, and I'm glad to count myself among those. And she will offer her own welcome in just a couple of moments. I want to say a few words about this year's Sabanji lecturer, Javier Solana. As everybody on both ends of this telebridge knows, Javier was for a decade the High Representative for Common Foreign and Security Policy for the European Union, as well as Secretary of the European Council. He was before that 5 years the Secretary General of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization during a period when that alliance was put to some unique tests that it withstood and prevailed over in no small measure because of Javier's leadership. We're very proud that he is now a distinguished fellow of the Brookings Institution. But let me go to the essence of the reason why Güler and her colleagues and Martin Indyk and Fiona and our colleagues on this end decided that he would be an appropriate person to give this year's lecture. It's a very simple reason indeed. There is no European who has done more to promote the recognition of Turkey's European vocation and advance the cause of Turkey's accession to the European Union. I can remember, because I was working very closely with him at the time on other issues, including ending a war in the Balkans, when Javier was in Helsinki for a European Council meeting of great import, because it was at that council meeting that it was decided to make Turkey officially and formally a candidate for membership in the European Union. And Javier got on a plane and flew to Ankara and met with Prime Minister Ecevit and began what we all hoped would be the process of bringing Turkey into the European Union. Now, that was, of course, a breakthrough moment. It was a moment of great hope, and a dozen years have passed since then, and that hope has not been fulfilled. And that is despite the fact that Javier has been unrelenting in his advocacy of Turkey taking its rightful place for the good not only of Turkey, but for the good of Europe and the good of the world in the European Union. Now, let me say just another word or two about the other gentleman here on the stage with me who is going to conduct a discussion with Javier after Javier gives his lecture. Kemal Dervish is, to put it mildly, well known on both sides of the telebridge that is connecting us to Sabancı University today. He's here at Brookings in his capacity as Vice President and Director of our program on the global economy and development. He also has an important role to play at Sabancı University. He is associated with the university's Istanbul Policy Center, and we're very fortunate that its new director, Fuad Kaiman, could be with us here this morning, and I personally look forward to working with you, Fuad, on what I can imagine are a whole number of issues where we will be able to collaborate in the future. Kemal is also a member of the Sabancı University's Advisory Board. As everybody knows, he's been a major figure on the world stage as the former head of the United Nations Development Program. He was, of course, a star, I'd even say a superstar at the World Bank, and he used his economic expertise and vision to great effect as the finance minister of Turkey. I've been fortunate enough to know Kemal for quite a long time, and I regard him as the ultimate global public servant and public intellectual. In short, he's the ultimate citizen of the world. He's at home on a number of continents, speaks a number of languages, cares about all of humanity. He's a champion of what he calls a better globalization, which, by the way, is the title of an excellent book that he wrote. And there are at least 12 copies still available in the Brookings bookstore outside, and it's also available online. But being a citizen of the world does not, in his case, or I think in anybody's case, mean that he is a man without a country. He does have a country. He has a native land, and it's Turkey. And he's very, very proud of that country. He has served Turkey well in the past, not least by virtually, if not literally, saving its economy from genuine crisis. He's finding ways of serving Turkey now, and he has integrated into his globe-trotting career and his cosmopolitan worldview a profound sense of the very best kind of patriotism, which he manifests as a commitment to the role that his country is already playing in the G20, on the world stage as a whole, and I would add the role that it must play in the European political, economic, and cultural space to which it belongs. So who better to lead us in a dialogue with the ultimate European, Javier Solana? But first, as Güler Sabancı comes up here to welcome all of you, please join me in thanking her for making this lecture series possible over these past 7 years. Güler, the microphone is yours.
Thank you, Strop. Thank you very much. Yes, good morning and good afternoon to Istanbul. It is indeed a great pleasure and honor to be here among with you here in Washington and on a seventh Sakıp Sabancı lecture. We were discussing among us, is it the sixth or the seventh? But eventually it is the seventh Sakıp Sabancı lecture, which is organized by Brookings Institute and Sabancı University in the name and in the spirit of Mr. Sabancı. And as most of you know, Mr. Sabancıoğlu has been put forward also with many times that he was not only a businessman, he was not only a business leader and an entrepreneur, but he was a philanthropist and he was a humanist. And I have witnessed, I worked with him for 28 years. I have been very close to him, so I know very clearly his strong belief in all the men has the right in the world to have a better life and a better democracy. He was a strong believer of that. And we believe it will be best way to remember him and to respect his memory is to suggest a team that best projects his values and his commitment to freedom of speech, to freedom of association, freedom of free markets, free enterprise, and most importantly, of course, his dedication was leaving a stable and livable and higher standard of living to the next generations. And this year's lecture and the speaker comes to a crucial point in time. These values are being tested again globally for all of us. The Turkeys, as you all know, immediate neighborhood, there is a powerful people's movement going on, which some of you call it Arab Spring, and demanding a greater say in the government and in their own destiny. The existing authoritarian regimes crumble one by one under the pressure of the people who have long been denied their freedoms. A nuclear disaster has just happened, triggered by a tragic tsunami in Japan, has reaffirmed for all of us our faith on the renewable sources of energy. The horrors of Fukushima disaster has also made us, I think, realize our shortcomings clearly in fulfilling our responsibilities to leave a cleaner and stable world for the generations to come. These and some others, all the imminent global challenges that we are facing, which comes with great risks and uncertainties, and yet also, I hope, with great opportunities, of course. All these uncertainties, and Turkey strives as the only stable country in its own region, with its secular democracy, rapidly growing economy, and a strong civil society, it continues to set a good example for its neighbors. Turkey's candidacy to European Union and its contributions to the transatlantic partnership is in the democracy in its own region, as well as its role as a reliable transatlantic country for energy supplies. All these and all the others that needs to be discussed further. But today, we are extremely fortunate and privileged to have Dr. Javier Solana with us to shed some much more anticipated light on the challenges and the opportunities waiting Turkey in this year and our world. And of course, it is a great pleasure and honor for me to see my good friend, Kemal Derviş, will be contributing to this discussion also. And I thank again. Yes, Strop is one of my good friends in Brookings, but I see so many of you coming here for the seventh time, being here for the seventh time. We see a lot of friends of Brookings and a lot of friends of the Sabancı University. It's a great pleasure to be here today with us, with all of you, and I thank all of you for attending and contributing as friends of Sabancı University and Brookings to the Sakıp Sabancı lecture. And I wish and I am sure we will have an engaging discussion afterwards also. I take this conference will stimulate all of us. Thank you again.
Thank you very much to everybody for being here. Aisha, thank you very much for the people you have there with you. Let me start by thanking the Brookings Institution for inviting me to address you in this seventh Sabancı lecture. Thank you very much, Strop, for your kind words. I know the what you mean. You mean what you say. We are good friends, and we will continue being good friends. And for me, it's a great pleasure to be here with you and all your team and at Brookings, Martin, etc. I'd like to say a word of thanks also to Wheeler. We were together, I think it's about a month ago, in Istanbul, in your university, in a beautiful 2 days of work, and work for Europe, and work for your country, for Turkey, and also a day that was raining. Just remember that it rained quite a lot. But in any case, we were a very, very successful couple of days, and I will not forget that. And I want to pay gratitude to you not only for what you have done economically for your country, your family, yourself today, but also what you have done on university-wise, on education. You have the most important university in Turkey, no doubt about that, but one of the most important universities in the region and recognized for their excellence in not only in Europe, but even beyond Europe. Well, I'm supposed to talk to you today, short, if I can, but the topic you put to me was not short, it was long. I will try to say a couple of words about where we are now and what the relation between Turkey and Europe has changed or could change from the moment in which it started, and I will recall those moments, to today, in the new situation of the world of today. Güler, you have described very well the uncertainties in which you are living. If this lecture were to have taken place 3 months or 3 months and a half ago, we had Osama bin Laden alive, Hosni Mubarak in power, President Ben Ali in power, and Japan, as you have mentioned, being the example in technology, in particular sophisticated technology for us. Now, today we have a very different situation. We have movements in Egypt and in many countries in the region. I take Egypt as an important one, but all of them as an important. We have witnessed the troops of Saudi Arabia crossing the border to Bahrain. We are seeing now a battle, a war, according to the, well, not a war, but an operation according to the UN Security Council resolution in Libya. And we had, as you have mentioned, a lot of suffering in Japan caused by nature. But not only the suffering of the people, but a fundamental change because the breaking of the nuclear power plants has brought to us a real new situation as far as energy is concerned. The trust we have on nuclear and nuclear energy is losing ground, and it will be very difficult to see it coming back soon. And therefore, all the issues related to the energy security will be very, very important. So we have a very different situation in the region in which Europe is, in our neighborhood, and it's very difficult in the region in which the neighborhood of Turkey is, because it's the same. And in these circumstances, I would like to say a few words about the Europe of today, which is different than the Europe of 1999, the Turkey of today, which is different from the Turkey of 1999, and what can we do together, and what are the benefits for Europe or for Turkey to continue working with determination in trying to make Turkey a full member of the European Union. That is my dream, and I expect to see it during my lifetime. A word about Europe. I mean, let me say that the Europe of today is larger than the Europe of 1999, is going through a very, very profound economic crisis that came about the same time that we approved the Lisbon Treaty. And you remember the Lisbon Treaty was the treaty that should accommodate the European Union to the new times. And it was supposed to be approved in 1995. And you remember it was approved two years and a half later, because of two referenda that say no, one in France and the other in the Netherlands. But imagine for a moment that in 1995 the treaty would have been approved, and that 3 years later the economic crisis came. But by that time, the treaty had been already developed, the new structure would have been in place, but we had the bad luck, if I may say, that the two things, the putting into place the treaty, the new treaty, and having to handle the economic crisis, the financial crisis, has made things, if that's an understatement to say, a little more difficult. Now, what do we have to do? We have to do to tackle the crisis, no doubt about that, and do things that were not thought to be done. For instance, to strengthen what is called the economic governance of the European Union. As you have seen, the Eurozone has had difficulties and problems due to the lack of capacity that we had in order to govern that situation in the appropriate manner. But as I said, if the treaty would have been approved in time, probably that situation would have been corrected and we would be able to tackle the crisis in a better manner. So what we have to do is to strengthen the governance of the Eurozone, no doubt about that. We have to do a lot of work on competitiveness. Really, Europe is getting behind on competitiveness. We have to do that, prepare better skills for people, and better education, and better science and technology. And that is something that we have to do in a rapid manner if we don't want to really lose the position that the European Union has had in this domain. I'd like to say also that we have to talk very seriously about the problem of migration vis-à-vis Europe. This is going to be, it is already a big problem, but with time will be a bigger problem. If I were to give you the figure that by the year 2050, the working force in Europe is going to be decreased by 70 million people. 70 million people by 2050. So that has to be resolved if you want to maintain our economy. And for that, we need, no doubt, migration and open the borders of the European Union. And as you know, the problem of migration is a complicated problem. It has to be handled appropriately, and not to create a debate about migration, which is not a problem of migration, but a problem of xenophobia, populism, etc. And we are beginning to see in Europe some examples of that, of what could that be. When you have populist political parties coming into the arena, which are authentic, I really don't like it. To see the authentic X, the authentic Y, this is a very delicate thing. We don't have to be authentic, we have to be just what we are. But when you have to add to what you are authentic, bad news. And that means other things what you want to say. So I would like to defend ourselves, and I will cooperate as much as I can to these potential movements, of real movements already about populism in Europe that I think we have to stop. But I'd like to say, with the link to the question of migration, that Europe has been, by definition, a place with cultural diversity. I would like to say that diversity is the destiny of the European Union. And this is very important being said here, because when we talk about Turkey, we're talking about diversity, but I'd like to claim and to defend the position that this diversity is what enriches profoundly the European Union. And at this point in time in history, what the European Union needs is not to be a museum, but to be an active player in the context of international politics. And for that, it needs the blood, the new blood, the new energy, the determination of the people of Turkey and the country which is Turkey. So I like to say that the European Union is different than the European Union of 1999 when we signed, but it's a European Union that some may say that is going through a difficult problem. You always go through different problems, but you always resolve the problems, you come out. And I'd like to say that as far as the strength of the economic governance if I were to tell you that never I would have believed that the decision that had been taken by the latest European Council, in particular since May the 7th of 2010, I never would have believed that that could be done. Today we don't have a treasury, but we are just about to have something very similar to that. We are not an state. The bank, the European Central Bank, has capacities today that it was impossible to dream in 1995, 1996, 1997 that could exist. And we will not play with Eurobonds, because that is a word that is absolutely forbidden in Germany. But the important thing is if we are able to do something like that, calling it in a different manner. And that is what we're doing, in fact, by the capacities we are given to the central bank to act. Therefore, I think that when you look at a Europe that you may think that is losing its position in the world, that has many differences inside and economic. By the way, parenthesis, if you were to look at the growth in the state of the United States, for instance, let me see, let me get one, Jim. Arizona and California, or Texas, better Texas. Texas has a fantastic economy, and California is bankrupt. Germany is having a fantastic economy, and Portugal today is taking a decision about getting help. Of course, we are not talking about the same two animals. One animal is a nation state, the United States, and the other, the European Union, is a collection of countries that would decided to live together and try to work together for the better of themselves and the better of the region and the world. But things are going well in everywhere, and things are going not so well in some parts. And this happens in every house, in your house and in our house too, being different. Now, the point is that in Turkey that is not happening. Turkey is growing. Turkey is navigating through the crisis in a manner which is not the manner in which we, the Europeans, or you, the Americans, have gone through. You really have put in place a very solid economy, and you have navigated extraordinarily well through the crisis. Kemal will be better speaker than me to say that. But I'd like to say that after having described a little bit what I see is the Europe of today, let me move on to what I see is the Turkey of today.